have a short comment by Mike Gibson. Welcome to Paris. And then we'll take the discussion afterwards. And your slides are right up there.
Thank you. Well, that was an excellent discussion. Let me move over to a different syndrome, ACS, namely. I received research grant support from all major manufacturers of antiplatelets and antithrombins. There are a lot of lessons here. We undertake phase two studies, and I go back, you know, 1,000 or more years to quote why we do phase two studies. All drugs are poisons, and the benefit depends on the dosage, and that's what we're trying to figure out is the dosage. And my favorite quote comes from William Osler: the person who takes medicine must recover twice, once from the disease and once from the medicine. We have to make sure that we're, having impact on the disease and minimizing the recovery from the medicine itself. This is why it's so tricky. We have to find the sweet spot of a U-shaped relationship. And as you can see, if you underdose, your efficacy is not going to be good in green, but as you get higher and higher doses, the green line gets lower and lower, indicating better efficacy. But on the other hand, bleeding goes up. And when you look at net outcomes, and that's in the kind of orange here, the sweet spot is what we're going for in our ultimate use of these drugs. We see this everywhere. When it comes to the optimal PTT with heparin after a lytic, there's a U-shaped response. Higher doses are not better. When we look at warfarin for atrial fibrillation, there's a sweet spot at an INR of 2 to 3. Higher doses are not always better. And even in the setting of MI, and this slide comes from Freck Verhoet, who identified this study for me, the sweet spot is not at the highest doses. And even on the antiplatelet side, aspirin also has a U-shaped response where the mid-dose or low dose is the optimal dose. A word of caution. The dose that was most optimal for rivaroxaban in ACS was a dose that was the lowest biologically active dose on top of aspirin and clopidogrel. It's a dose about which we had some of the least amount of data in phase two. So that really indicates the importance of trying to do your homework in phase two. If you thought 10 arms was a lot, you will blush when you see what we did in our phase two study, which was about almost 20 arms. Different doses, different timing, once a day, twice a day. And in phase two, your endpoint is a bleeding endpoint. Now, mercifully, the bleeding, what we used was what I called and redefined as clinically relevant non-major bleeding. This is bleeding that would require you to come to the hospital or seek medical attention. This is the most sensitive measure of bleeding. It includes stroke, but it certainly isn't pivoting on catastrophic bleeding. So what we picked was the most sensitive measure of bleeding. And using the most sensitive measure of bleeding, you can see a very beautiful dose response curve. Now, had we chosen the traditional TIMI major or TIMI minor bleeding, you don't really see much of a dose response curve. So lesson number one, pick a very sensitive metric of bleeding, like clinically relevant non-major bleeding. That will help you generate your dose response curve. On the other hand, even though we saw a dose response curve for bleeding, we did not see a dose response curve over here on the right, rivaroxaban on top of aspirin and clopidogrel. We did not see a dose response curve on efficacy. So that makes it a little challenging. On the other hand, efficacy was grossly and woefully underpowered in this phase two study. But when you begin to pull some data, you do see that the doses we move forward into phase three, the low and very low doses, they did generate here a non-significant trend towards benefit. And ultimately, it was the selection of this very low dose that generated what you see here, the primary efficacy endpoint data showing a 16% relative risk reduction in efficacy. So people said, were you surprised by this? We actually were not surprised. If we were surprised, we were surprised that it wasn't as big as what we saw in phase two. And I do think the surprising thing, though, is that this very low dose, the dose that was barely biologically active, was associated with a pretty pronounced reduction in mortality. So similar to what Dr. Geller said earlier, the safety signal may emerge early, but in phase three, as you see here, some of the efficacy signal, it takes time for that to emerge. She's absolutely right. 12 weeks of exposure is woefully inadequate to really detect an efficacy response. It's fairly inadequate to even detect a safety response. We went 6 months to begin to detect a safety response with a very sensitive measure of bleeding. I hate to say it, but when it comes to fatal or catastrophic events like ICH, it really, these fatal catastrophic events really require sample sizes of about 6,000 to 8,000 patients to truly define their incidence. And it is not until phase three that you really, really begin to determine if you have a winner or a loser. So I think our job in phase two is to identify candidates. Bleeding is the primary guide. I would urge you to go with very sensitive measurements of bleeding, as we did. But on the other hand, you aren't going to know until you're many thousands of patients into it as to whether you have a winner or loser in terms of efficacy. One final note of caution. This result was different than what was seen in APPRAISE 2. I see John Lawrence here from the company who worked on APPRAISE 2. What we did differently was we had the benefit of having done the Triton study prior to this, where we saw an increased risk of worse outcomes in terms of efficacy among people who had a prior stroke or TIA. And I made it one of my life's ambitions never to repeat that lesson again. So we did not include people with prior stroke or TIA in our experience. If you look at the APPRAISE experience, if you look at the arm of patients who did not have a prior stroke or TIA, the hazard ratio there is 0.88, a 12% relative risk reduction, a p of 0.08. So people often say, why didn't APPRAISE get the same results? I think APPRAISE probably would have had very similar results had they excluded patients with prior stroke or TIA. So a final word of caution, at least with triple therapy, aspirin, clopidogrel, these new drugs, don't give these drugs to people with prior stroke or TIA. Dual antiplatelet therapy is already a contraindication in someone with prior stroke or TIA. Don't add a third drug to it. So that would be my advice. I think it's a great idea to think about the adaptive design, but I think Dr. Geller is absolutely right. I'm not sure it shaves a lot of time off the timeline in development of new agents. Thank you.
Thank you very much.